Blog Talk Radio.
Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water. Sounds of the Living Water Radio Show.
We teach the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Preach the gospel unto the scattered nations. So many people are lost, it's time to be awakened. Come out of this world, it's ran by Satan. Through the Most High's laws, bleed from things pagan. Understanding the word of Yah is really breathtaking. Under his love, recovering, it's so amazing. Thank you each day, so now let's praise him. Do things in unity, you and me. You wanna know what we're talking about? Come and see. It's time to be deeply rooted up like a tree. You want the truth, it will set you free.
Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show. Sounds of the living water. Sounds of the living water, sounds of the living water, radio show.
Yay. Well, good afternoon. Welcome to a new decade. This is Rob Christensen, and my topic today is adding love to the climate battle. And just what inspired this, I guess, is, you know, looking at, there was a presidential candidate, Marianne Williamson, talking about love and fear. And indeed, our world seems to be ruled by fear these days with all the crazy things happening. But anyways, I'm recovering from a crash. I guess I was due. I had kind of a scratchy throat, and I got the achy-breaky flu. And it gave me some time to reflect and just kind of embrace the pain and let my body battle it out. It's nice to have some free time where you can read and ponder and reflect on, you know, what's ahead of you. So I just saw this email about the love and fear. And I'm realizing that, you know, in this battle about climate and climate engineering, the fact that it's ignored by most, it's a conspiracy theory, yet it's a number one disruptive force in our planet. And yet it seems to be so few speaking about it. And there are so many bad things. Anger can overcome a person sometimes. It's so frustrating. And that's where, you know, the word love comes in, is if you're trying to make a better world, if people perceive that spirit in you of anger, you might not get anywhere. They might not listen to you. Somehow you've got to tap into that deep level. There's an analogy, like if I was a lake, at the surface, lots going on, all the my wants and needs, but on a deeper level, there's no movement, there's stillness, there's peace, and somehow that stillness and peace has to shine through as we go about our daily lives. So I'll break this blog down in three parts. I want to get back into some climate engineering, Brother Job, as you've encouraged that, so I'll talk about a typical day with, or an hour with Dane Wigington, where he does some quotes, and then he talks about all the global events happening that pertain to the environment and how climate engineering ties into it all. And so what is going on in the broad horizon as we look at the orchestrated distractions of political theater and mainstream media? And also my resumption of the climate battle with an article I wrote for Extinction Rebellion, Twin Cities. I want to share that article if time permits. So some areas of investigation that I don't have time for, but nevertheless are critical for a better understanding of reality with biblical scripture embedded. I will mainly cite where one can access this information. I want to get into that if I get a chance. So with that, I just want to share a little bit about my personal experience getting sick. And, you know, one always asks, when you get really badly sick, it seems that I had a temperature, I had headache, I had nasal infection, you know, you always want to sneeze or and on and on. Anything but the stomach flu. At least I didn't have that, but I had everything else. Could I have avoided this? Maybe. But I think, you know, once you get a scratchy throat, the sign is there. Gradually things at some point are going to just break and bust. And the circumstance that made me think is that as I came to work on the Friday of getting that flu, I had a very angry note in my truck as I started the day. And I knew who it was from. Brother Job, I'm sure, does too. His name is Matt. He's kind of the backbone of our company. But at the same time, I've nicknamed him Oscar the Grouch. Yeah, you know, I accept him for who he is. He very diligent, works very hard, very dedicated, but gets very angry. And kind of in an Oscar the Grouch way, he's, you know, a good person underneath, but at the same time, he can make people angry, which, so that note is something I glossed over, and I really should have read the whole note, even though it, you know, I'd worked so hard. I'm going the extra mile during the holidays. I'd gone to this Owatonna, which put 4 extra hours onto my day. That note made me angry because here I'm trying to help, and then I get an angry note. So the ego takes over sometimes, the reactive ego that instead of embracing, accepting, surrendering to what is, I resisted. I resisted by not reading that note. So I'm kind of in an unconscious state, a chronic unconscious state, instead of being present in the here and now. I'm going through the motions of the day. And as I finished that day, I misinterpreted what the letter meant from Matt. And I parked in the wrong dock. I thought that was the right thing to do. But again, I hadn't really thoroughly read the note. So by parking in this other dock at Owatonna, I parked in the wrong place. And I took off. There was no mail to take out. I didn't even make contact with the Owatonna people. I struggled for sleep all the way back, some micro sleeps here and there, and it's dangerous enough, you know, when you add 4 hours to your normal schedule. But I made it back in relief, and all of a sudden I get this note on my text that my boss was trying to call me. I find that my personal cell phone, the toggle switch was off, so that phone sound was off. And as I hung up when I was in Owatonna, my other phone, when I hung it up, it silently goes off sometimes. So here it is. I have a note that I'm supposed to go all the way back for another hour and a half back to this dock to move the trailer over one slot to the proper dock. I can't do it. I'm too tired. And of all things, luckily my manager found somebody to do it, but it's the last person in the world I would have wanted to make up for my mistake. So the long and short of this personal story is it sent me into a downward spiral, into a deep unconscious state. In other words, my presence of mind is totally lost. I'm depressed. I made this mistake. I'm just feeling bad about myself. And I just couldn't let go of this problem. Again, my ego, the egoic mind, has so much resistance, so many emotions that, you know, a lot of emotional garbage that the ego hangs on to. So as a lesson to be learned, I went out running that night just to try to get some of that bad thought feeling away. And I come back shivering, just uncontrollably. So, okay, I've got the flu. And so from the start of those three exclamation points that made me angry and made me react, life's lessons always learned that how to stay calm and keep an even keel. But I did finish this book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle while I had the flu. And that's where love comes into this climate conversation. And I just want to share with you a question, because this question gets to the heart of the book. If there's a really good book, I don't want to, you know, I want to take something that I've always got, and this is what I'll take with me for this book. Here's the question. Is it not true that you need to have a good relationship with yourself and love yourself before you can have a fulfilling relationship with another person? Well, a little beside the point, but later it goes on, it says, but do you need to have a relationship with yourself at all? Why can't you just be yourself? When you have a relationship with yourself, you have split yourself into two, I and myself, subject and object. That mind-created duality is the root cause of all necessary, all unnecessary complexity. That complexity I just made for myself with that mistake of mine. Unnecessary complexity of all problems and conflict in your life. In the state of enlightenment, you are yourself. You and yourself merge into one. You do not judge yourself. You do not feel sorry for yourself. You are not proud of yourself. You do not love yourself. You do not hate yourself, and so on. The split caused by self-reflective consciousness is healed. Its curse removed. There is no self that you need to protect, defend, or feed anymore. When you are enlightened, there is one relationship that you no longer have, the relationship with yourself. Once you have given that up, all other relationships will be love relationships. So there's the word love in there, that, you know, a life lesson learned, and we keep relearning. But there's another part here in the book, too, that applies to my mandate, my mission in life, that is so difficult to continue with in many cases, but that I've been discussing in the last blog somewhat about this power of now and how it fits into Christianity and Buddhism. You know, it's kind of at the root of how we live. It says, but don't confuse cause and effect. Your primary task is not to seek salvation through creating a better world, which, you know, that's what I'm into, creating a better world, but to awaken out of identification with form. In other words, the physical world, the geoengineering, the rain, the hurricanes, whatever. You are then no longer bound to this world, this level of reality. You can feel your roots in the unmanifested and so are free of attachment to the manifested world. You can still enjoy the passing pleasures of this world, but there is no fear of loss anymore. So you don't need to cling to them. Although you can enjoy sensory pleasures, the craving for sensory experience is gone, as is the constant search for fulfillment through psychological gratification, through feeding the ego. Again, psychological gratification. It is gratifying to feel that I'm part of helping to save this planet, with trying to expose the lie in the skies of geoengineering. It is very gratifying, but that is the danger in many ways too, is that when people don't share that, when people don't know about it, it can cause the egoic mind, the reaction the resistance, the frustration with people, and thus cloud, you know, one's ability to change, to help the cause. So you are in touch with something infinitely greater than any pleasure, greater than any manifested thing. So in a way, then, you don't need the world anymore. You don't even need to be different from the way it is. It is only at this point that you begin to make a real contribution toward bringing about a better world, towards creating a different order of reality. It is only at this point that you are able to feel true compassion and to help others at the level of cause. Only those who have transcended the world can bring about a better world. So that's some pretty profound stuff. And at this point, I want to go into a typical hour with Dean Wigginton. Now, here's a man that expresses his anger about how things are, but he usually has a quote at the beginning, at the end, some profound way of expressing words and wisdom. And I do believe this man as a very person in the now. He is a very loving person. He loves creation, and he's doing his best to help people see how we can stop doing what we're doing in the way our planet's destroying, and to understand how our government and all the lies within our system, our power structure. anyways, it's December 28th, and he starts out with a quote by Aldous Huxley. Says, by means of ever more effective methods of mind manipulation, again, manipulating our egos, the democracies will change their nature. The quaint old forms like parliaments, supreme courts will remain. The underlying substance will be a new kind of totalitarianism. All of the traditional names, all of the hallowed slogans will remain exactly what they were in the good old days. Democracy and freedom will be the theme of every broadcast and editorial. Meanwhile, the ruling oligarchy and its highly trained elite of soldiers, policemen, thought manufacturers, and mind manipulators will quietly run the show as they see fit. And I can't resist giving one example here. I've done some research on the Soleimani assassination. And again, as in my last blog, I was talking about how the two sides of the political battle, they go to the fringes, but not far enough. And here's an example where immediately Soleimani had planned all these murders. He's a terrorist and so forth, even though he's an official of a sovereign government, a chief defense official. So immediately it's just taken for granted. This guy's a terrorist. He's plotting to kill a bunch of people. But I've done, a couple hours at least of research into this. It just so happens that Soleimani was on a peace mission between Iran and Iraq with the help of the Saudis. And our president gave his blessing to that and then turns around and kills the same man that he communicated with. So that's in a nutshell. You know, there may be slightly inaccurate here, but the fundamental point is the thing about this man has got these evil plots. Who's verified this? What is verified is that he was on a peace mission. He wasn't planning on killing a bunch of people at that time. And Iraq, after, our drones and continue to kill people in Iraq, one of the veterans was talking about it, that, how we raid neighborhoods and terrorize neighborhoods, kill and maim, for suspects. the sovereign government that has been built up in Iraq is one that, you know, installed under U.S. oversight. Well, that's the same government that now wants us the hell out of there. So that's an interesting thing where some will take Mr. Trump and say, oh, he did the right thing, otherwise this man, this crazy man would have killed more. And on the other side of the aisle, they say, well, yes, he was a terrible man, but, you know, this strategy isn't going to work right. Well, again, you know, that's two sides of the same coin failing, in my opinion. It's when you learn the whole ugly history of our intervention, you know, when has Iran gone in another country and terrorized people? It hasn't in over 200 years. So I digress a little bit here, but that's just to get the point of what Huxley's saying, is that the manipulators will quietly run the show as they see fit. So, again, learn to not take first word of mainstream media. Learn to, more often than not, it's a bald-faced lie. and Dane responds to a criticism next when he's talking about, somebody said to him, keep your politics views out of your reports. And here is my reply, according to Dane. He says, I will continue to present the facts that make clear that all sides of the orchestrated political divide are blinding distractions from the wider horizon. A blinding distraction from the mathematical, statistical fact that if the human race remains on the current course, we are not going to be here much longer. Those, you know, he's got some powerful words. Now, he goes into, again, a broad look at the world. The International Criminal Court, that the first, he finds several articles. He founds that the International Criminal Court wants to probe war crimes in Palestine, in the Palestinian territories. They will investigate Israeli military for crimes against the Palestinians. Also, another article, Netanyahu claims International Court has no jurisdiction to investigate the Israeli war crimes. And as Dane says, who is above the law? Who are we not allowed to criticize? That is who is in control. And Dane has pointed out, for anyone to check into how powerful Israel is in the Zionist mindset, just read the protocols. Just look that up. And that's about the Zionist plan to take over the world, basically. You know, you can call it a conspiracy theory. But another outstanding documentary, Peace Propaganda in the Promised Land. And it shows graphic, hard-to-take video presentation of what's going on in Palestine. It really is heart-wrenching. Another thing, another item, USS Liberty, where the U.S. men ruthlessly slaughtered, were ruthlessly slaughtered. No investigation or accountability. Again, that was the Israeli army, you know, taking down our ship and killing U.S. Military men. So, you know, how do they get off scot-free? Another interesting one, and this one, was so hard to read personally, and there are some biblical quotes along with this, because Harold Wallace Rosenthal, is a man, a Jewish man that worked with Vice President Mondale, and you know, he's a young man, very sharp, but he had an interview where he spells out everything about the Zionist workings, plans, how, you know, the takeover, fans that how, and it, he disparages how stupid Christianity and, you know, the Western way is being fooled by the Zionist ability to take over the financial situation in the media. And he, I remember he cites several media owners of you know, Jewish origin. And it's hard to explain, and I won't go into it, but definitely look up Harold Wallace Rosenthal. You know, it's a hard interview to take. This man is evil, pure evil. And yet he was an aide to Senator Javits. He was an aide to Walter Mondale. And it's like when he just for some reason spells out all the secret stuff that we're not supposed to know. He later was killed in a terrorist assassination. And it's very likely he gave too much information in that interview. And that's probably why he was killed. He was too point blank telling secrets that were not supposed to be revealed. Very interesting interview. So, and then another quote to end that Global Alert News was from H.L. Mencken. The most dangerous man to any government is the man who is able to think things out for himself without regard to the prevailing superstitions and taboos. Again, H.L. Mencken was the famous journalist from several decades back, but one of the most famous ever. Almost invariably, this person comes to the conclusion that the government he lives under is dishonest, insane, and intolerable. So if he is a romantic, he tries to change it. If he is not a romantic personally, he is apt to spread discontent among those who are. The men the American people admire most extravagantly are the most daring, liars. The men they detest the most violently are those who try to tell them the truth. So H.L. Mencken. So, pardon my voice, I'm still recovering from that flu a little bit. Got to clear my throat now and then. So if the human race remains on the current course, near-term planetary omnicide is a mathematical certainty. And Dane cites UK Guardian. U.S. rules out any talk of climate crisis in trade negotiations. At 2020, we collectively face an unimaginably dark horizon. So will we disregard and just think happy thoughts? Answer, it is just that kind of head-in-the-sand behavior that has brought us to this dark hour. And I must admit, I've had happy thoughts with the Vikings being, you know, maybe not paying attention to the season, but I couldn't help but spend time, you know, listening to the game. And I was sick as an excuse, whatever. But it's true, though, that it's so easy to get caught up in all the allure of entertainment and just totally drop the responsibility of this, of the broad horizon and what's really going on with this planet. So Dane refuses to be a part of this happy thought stuff. If we yet have any chance of turning the tide, that chance will come only from a collective effort to face the full fury of the storm ahead of us. So there's great solace in fully resolving oneself to do so. And know this, every single individual that our collective efforts helps to awaken matters. Reaching a critical mass of awareness is the only way forward in this fight. We must, you know, and he goes on to say the geoengineeringwatch.org has the printed materials that, you know, you don't need to be deeply involved in as a climate scientist, so to speak. It's all there on the printed materials, the explanations and the facts and the photos. So Dane goes on with more of the search of articles that point out the crisis we face. 2 million homeless Aussies in Australia. Then he goes on, Redding, California. Dane had worked 3 years part-time with the homeless. And, you know, it's personally, I know this too. I see homeless all the time, and I just go by them so often, I don't have anything prepared or ready just to give. But he interviewed four homeless on the way home from Shasta when he was driving. And he was really encouraged that three of the four knew of climate engineering, and one of them even had one of Dane's tape. So how ironic is that? You know, we have society looks down on homeless people so often, and yet how close are so many of us to being homeless? For, you know, some catastrophe happens in our life, we're going to be in the same spot. And the homeless people are using the least amount of energy to burn up this poor planet, for one thing. So the industrial and military society seeks perpetual comfort and material wealth, and then, or the misery and the suffering of the many on the other side of it all, for the temporary material gain of the few. Delusion, deception, denial are themes of the day. Even at this late hour, so many suffering, life support systems failing. So what's the final cost of the American dream? The tyranny, one side or the other, power structure agendas. Oil, it's always been the paradigm. Dane says that it used to be that one barrel of oil, you could pump up 1,000 barrels. You could produce 1,000 barrels out of one barrel. In the 21st century, one barrel gets 6 to 7 barrels as opposed to 1,000. And finally, fracking is negative. We are converting natural gas into dirty crude. So, you know, what he's saying here is you look at the trend of oil, it's a snake eating its tail. It's contamination of, especially with the shale industry, contamination all over the groundwater. And then he cites an article about how Texas feels the shale slowdown. And by the way, this fracking process releases a lot of methane, which is the worst kind of atmospheric molecule to have in the, you know, it heats up the planet. EcoWatch.com, bankruptcy to duck cleanup costs. We pay, the taxpayers. Solar, there's a discussion on renewables. So solar panels and so forth. Is that all good? According to Dane, there's all kinds of authority that it has a very limited life. It takes a lot of chemicals to make solar panels. So renewable energy is a hydrocarbon fuel extension, in effect. You know, for cars, electric cars, it's going to take a lot of coal to supply, you know, the batteries. So it's wind power. It's $10 billion plus for offshore decommissioning. So, you know, we make these wind turbines, and what happens, they don't last long. They're supposed to last 25 years, and they don't, not even close, and they have to be decommissioned. So you think of the energy to make renewables, and again, with a limited energy budget of this planet, a lot of these solutions that we cheer and say everything's good are not so great. That's his general point. So everything industrial, militarized societies produce is in a state of deterioration. And that's the overview of those articles. in the electric vehicle revolution, child labor in the Congo for cobalt, you know, for batteries. So there's been a lawsuit against Dell, Tesla, Apple, Microsoft, etc., for allowing this child labor of cobalt, because, you know, of course, those companies have got their tentacles in Africa and other countries. So nuclear power, here's another thing. Is that cheaper? No, more expensive. $14 to $21 billion, I guess, is a plant in Georgia in the United States, if you look at the United States. It's taken 10 years longer to get this plant built. It's been 10 times the original expense as planned. It was supposed to be 2016, where the plant would be final. Now they're looking at 2022. So, again, with nuclear power, we have weather, earthquakes, tsunamis, we have error, technical failure, and then climate change, droughts. In other words, if you have a severe drought and you need cooling waters, well, you run out of cooling waters. You know, a river that would cool the local plants here in the Minnesota, we're in pretty good shape because the St. Croix River, for example, keeps flowing steady. But what about when you get a drought? What are you going to do when you don't have the water to, the cool enough waters to cool down the plant? So there's just, you know, they claim clean, efficient, safe, and none of these is true. They are all grave danger, physical and psychological, too. In other words, we know that with nuclear plants, it's all linked to cancer. And there's that psychological sense that if we have a plant in our neighborhood and it costs 100 kilowatts per hour, is it really worth it when there's the cancer threat, you know, of a leak at some point, or, you know, just the employees that work there? So you can compare and compare 100 per kilowatt hour, 50 to 30 for wind, you know, $50 per kilowatt hour. It's, and even more with nuclear plants, Stuxnet. That virus, the Stuxnet virus, invented with the cooperation of Israel and the United States, that had intervened in the Iranian nuclear plants and screwed up their plants, also screwed up the Fukushima plant. Their emergency backup systems did not work thanks to our Stuxnet virus. So just think, even after the tsunami, there may have been a chance to prevent this disaster to some degree, but the Stuxnet virus prevented it. And of course, it's been said too that with Fukushima, the superheating as measured by MIT, you know, a university institution, was extremely anomalous. So indeed, the use of ionospheric heaters to reflect waves back down into the ocean may well have been the cause of that tsunami. And that's going pretty deep, but we have to be aware of these things. Otherwise, you know, the train, the light's at the end of the tunnel and it's a train coming at us. We need to be aware. Another thing Dane pointed out is, excuse me, dead leaves on trees hanging is not natural. Ice nucleation and ice nucleated storms prevent leaves from the abscission process, where, you know, the abscission process is where leaves break off naturally due to the changes in the season. Well, when you have these artificial storms, that abscission process doesn't get a chance because of the frozen chemicals and precipitation. It shuts off the abscission problem, so the leaves are stuck on the tree. So there's all kind of evidence out there of how we tamper with the weather. And, you know, I could go on and on, but I wanted to give a sample of just how many things are out there on the news. Just a few more. KTVA radio, snow for Christmas Eve in Alaska. Well, again, there's been no Iditarods, proper Iditarods with natural snow for the last 5 or 6 years in Alaska. It's overheating. But do they have, you know, a little bit of reprieve to take people's mind and think happy? Yeah, they have a snowy Christmas Eve in Alaska. You know, artificial weather. Courthousenews.com, melting Greenland ice sheet that would bring about a 23-foot rise over time. In Antarctica, as that melts, 190-foot sea rise. Then there's talk about our Pentagon not prepared, perhaps, for some of the weapons coming out of Russia and China and so forth. But yet, are we not the biggest polluters? Russia has announced a second nuclear attack submarine. Again, you know, military budgets are going up while the climate collapses. It's insanity. So remaining resources on a dying planet to build more weapons of mass destruction. And then, you know, on and on, wireless 5G insanity, microwave the web of life. Why not? Again, this is 5G is a military tool that can be used for its frequency for crowd control. Dumping of radioactive waste approved. 450 more nuclear reactors throughout the globe. So I'll just stop at that. I wanted to, you know, he goes into vaccination, the whole mess there, glyphosate, PFAS, that's a chemical that they're finding in the rain. I guess it has some chlorine in it, but it's like the stuff they make Teflon from. Scientists are finding that all over the place. It affects the immune system and the thyroid. It's in our food. So PFAS, look that up. There's, you know, there's another sign of the times. But what I want to go to now is back to my personal effort in the climate battle. And it's an article I wrote for the Extinction Rebellion in Twin Cities, that organization. They're working to get to the media some kind of article to, you know, open up to different, to the radio, whatever form of media will accept it, to announce who we are and what we're doing. So just give me a moment and I'll get to that article. I have to open up my computer. So this will pretty much take me to the end of the hour. I got to run at 4. But my article goes this. Take a good long look in the mirror. That's the title. We all sense it. Something's wrong. The future looks grim. So we turn away to seek those familiar comforts that give us some temporary relief from the bad news of a planet that is spinning out of control. The truth of this reality hurts so much, it seems, that in spite of good intentions, few, if any, especially here in the USA, are willing to face this gathering storm head on. But will living in a fantasy world solve the problem? To put it bluntly, the problem of imminent extinction of the entire web of life. Each and all of us have a stake in this battle. Daniel Quinn said it best in his award-winning book, Ishmael, an early 90s book about how to solve the extinction problem. Does Earth belong to us, or do we belong to Earth? If we perceive our species to be the end-all, be-all of creation, then our sorry story has indeed been enacted as if to conquer nature until we absolutely control it and thus end creation itself. Again, without weather, we would not have creation. Without weather, we would not have the rain that replenishes and refreshes, the dry, the sun that gives us, you know, the plants the chance to grow. So again, in page 257 of that book, and they're doing a damn good job of it. In other words, you know, we're well underway in bringing us toward extinction. So can we not look beyond our personal desires? Do we not owe our all to the greater good and the future of our children? I'm paraphrasing Gayne Wigington here. It seems that selling murder for the greater good, and this is an article by Gary Burnett, still rules the day. Again, selling murder for the greater good still rules the day. Well, look at that assassination that just took place. How can we have a blind eye, a normalcy bias, to ignore how humans are threatening Earth's existence from the top down? Do we continue following the psychopath, to a meltdown end, Venus syndrome? Or do we find our way to a sustainable life path into the future? If scientific data are anywhere near the truth about plummeting wildlife populations from insects to mammals, vanishing forests, from woodland to water, as in kelp forests, then we are in a nonlinear trajectory right now, not somewhere down the road. It's not could, may, might happen. It is now. A vivid example of this time-lapse collapse is witnessed in the video Chasing Ice. Time-lapse photography clearly shows how rapidly multiple glaciers in the Arctic regions literally vanish in front of our eyes in a few short years with that time-lapse photographs. We have modern militarized industrialized societies continued to squabble over countless issues without looking at the broad horizon through clear lenses. For example, military budgets are ever increasing, while the biosphere and the planet's life support systems continue to collapse. Is eternal growth the only policy for a finite planet with finite resources? Australia is literally up in smoke, yet this frontline news remains mostly as a backstory, though it is impossible for mainstream media to completely ignore this crisis. Thousands are trapped on coastal beaches of Australia with nowhere else to go. Any solution with the Fukushima disaster is ever remote. Yet many new nuclear plants continue to be made. Fukushima itself is an extinction threat. Need I go on? And I will point out, too, that climate engineering is a very key part affecting Australia. It's probably the chief reason for it. It is the chief reason for those fires. In fact, the psychopaths that rule use fires to cover up the problem of global heating. So when you have these massive plumes of smoke, it does cool the planet temporarily at the overall cost of long-term warming, long-term collapse. Some technical solutions are out there, such as renewable energy. However, are we not beyond the point of a tech fix for every problem? Most technologies either exacerbate the problem or simply extend the use of hydrocarbons. Countless forms of micropollution from plastics, heavy metals, and other harmful chemicals like glyphosate are showing up anywhere scientists look. How about the weather itself? Should we not be investigating these whiplash events? If it snows in Mexico, it's raining in Alaska. Category 5 Hurricane Dorian was on a path into the eastern USA coast, yet it stayed relatively stationary for almost 50 hours? How can that be? Given all the weather modification, climate engineering patents on public record, shouldn't questions be raised as to whether these patents have been and are being applied? We're not talking about some local cloud seeding operation here. This is a globally used technology. It would be a betrayal of any local press not to include the fact that a Minnesota group, Stop Geoengineering Minnesota, has taken leadership in a lawsuit versus the federal government under the Freedom of Information Act. They are attempting to get disclosure on the issue of climate engineering, its impacts, how it is being used, and who is in charge of weather forecasting. Raytheon, by the way. How much warning and consent was given to our soldiers and the public for the go-ahead of hundreds of the most destructive nuclear weapons tests? Damage from those tests continues to this day. The same question goes for climate engineering. Are weather patents out there just for the sake of invention? What agendas underlie these patents? Has any consent been granted from the public to to permit these operations. Overwhelming evidence can be shown which proves these operations are ongoing and disastrous. We challenge the reader to investigate this topic in spite of all the smoke and mirrors. Yes, we do belong to Earth, and we can enact a new story in accord with the Earth as we awaken to the greatest existential challenge in billions of years in which life has existed on this miracle gem of a planet. As sleuths for truth, however dire, how can we honor those who came before us and those who will come after us? Please contact Extinction Rebellion Twin Cities if you are interested in changing your personal life to live like you belong to this planet. And if you would like to investigate and act on the best priorities available to jumpstart the salvage process, is there still time left to salvage life on this once thriving planet? No one knows. But to muster some courage and act, regardless of outcome, can only bring peace and solace until the end. In a world Orwellian, 2020, bring on the rebellion. And that's the end of my article. And I know that Extinction Rebellion, I don't know that there's one person there that I know is with me. She understands 9/11. She gets it. I had a good discussion with her. So I guess I'll just keep at them. And maybe some version of this article that I just read can be published. I will report that I guess it's no surprise. I should know better. My attempts, again, getting back into the climate battle, I'm looking at libraries, another library to go to do displays. My effort to get into graduate school for the Master's in Advocacy and Leadership program has failed. So this is my second attempt. So I'm not discouraged. This is nothing new in my 3 years of this battle, where I've made very clear factual information to people. I've done the best I could to convey the urgency of this problem. And the clue was, you know, when I visited this director he's a recruiter, you know, for students. I had a good conversation with him. He took all the information, real nice. But when I come back later after failing the first attempt in another department, I went back to this department, which I probably should have stayed with in the first place. But he introduced three of us, and of the two students, young students he interviewed or introduced, he gave detailed descriptions of their accomplishments and this and that and what they were about. When he introduced me, it's just like, oh, and there's Rob Christensen. And nothing. He didn't give me a chance to speak because, again, I had written to him about 9/11 and all the truths that are now finally coming out. It's just taboo. So, again, as the quote goes early on, you know, when you tell the truth, you're hated sometimes. And one has to use their love. You know, their depths, the ocean that's within us, or the lake that go to those deep inner depths, and not let the ego get in the way, not let the reaction of you know, feeling bitter about being rejected. You know, it's, I don't have to feel bitter. When there's three exclamation points on a note, I got to read that note and embrace who that person is and know he is who he is, and big deal, he doesn't have to ruin my day. So with that, may love prevail as we continue to our lives in this new decade and fight for our lives and the lives of our future. All right. Thank you for this opportunity, and I look forward to the next program. And I should ask before I close, if there's any questions. Okay, Sister Raya, I know you've been busy, but just want to get attention. Okay, I guess I'll hang up for now, and again, thanks for your attention, or your future attention. I know not many people are listening at this hour, but if you catch me later, that would be great.